Hey, greetings everyone. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, and welcome to the Steadfast and Loyal podcast. You gotta light 'em up before they burn it down. Let her dig deep, put 'em in the ground. But on their hands, they're hell bound. Sing a song.
Hey folks, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West here at Watchtower Firearms. This is the custom designed AR-15 that was just made for me. It's got my Steadfast and Loyal logo there. On this side, you can see my signature, my master parachutist wings, of course, American flag. And I just want to tell you that you can't be a great American unless you have a great American weapon. And that's exactly what Watchtower Firearms is building. Great American weapons. All American parts manufactured right here in the great state of Texas. And oh, by the way, the where is the serial number on this one? TX-1836. If you're from Texas, I think you know what that means. God bless you. God bless Watchtower.
Hey, Bird Center. Yes.
Hey, greetings, everyone. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West here. Welcome back to the Steadfast and Loyal podcast. You know, what we're doing is we're looking at some national congressional races that are around there. And so often people look at, you know, the typical races and everybody's very familiar. But there are some members out there that I think need to get sent a packing list to go home. And one of those individuals is Cori Bush out in St. Louis, Missouri area. And when you look at her background and see, you know, the radicalism and look at some of the things she said and her pro-Hamas stance, well, we've got a gentleman that's challenging her, and his name is Andrew Jones. And Andrew Jones was born in Cairo, Illinois, and raised in East St. Louis, a mere 7 miles from his current home in the Botanical Heights neighborhood. A proud St. Louis resident for over 30 years, he has served his community in various capacities, particularly mentoring our youth. Andrew rose through the ranks at a power and energy company and then moved to his current position as the Executive Vice President of Business Development and Marketing at Southwest Electric. He currently lives, as we said, in Botanical Heights, with his neighborhood, in that neighborhood, with his wife Sheila. Andrew Jones, thanks for joining us here at the Steadfast and Loyal podcast.
Good morning. It is an absolute honor and pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. Give us a little bit about your background. So you're there from that neighborhood. What was your upbringing like? Tell us a little bit about your educational background.
Well, I come from humble beginnings. My family was a working class family. My father, believe it or not, was born in 1910, had me when he was 50 years old. Wow. In 1960. So I'm currently 63 years old, and I got old sage advice from my father and his friends from being born back in that time period. And if you go back to that time period, you'll find out African Americans were steadfast, they were loyal, they were brilliant people, they were honorable citizens to this great country. And that was instilled into me in a very early age. And my father wanted me to have an outstanding, and my siblings, an outstanding education. Went and matriculated to universities here in the metropolitan St. Louis area at Washington University, received master's degrees, and was employed in the electric utility business here right about almost 40 plus years now. And I rose through the ranks to where I am now, executive vice president. And I've worn just about every hat you can name, led various departments from economic development, business development. And I've done everything that everyone would say that's fulfilling the American dream. But one thing that I did also do is what you mentioned, is that I've been involved with the youth, trying to somewhat give back, I say, so to speak. And I've been involved since the 1990s and things of that nature. And that kind of drove me when I saw that St. Louis was going off the skids, a lot of high crime. And I thought that I had something to give. to help you to be able to turn their lives around, to give them purpose and let them know that the light at the end of the tunnel is not a train. It's a light of hope. And if we pursue things that our forefathers and foremothers have done, we have a great opportunity to fulfill everything and change our trajectory to be absolutely full-fledged citizens into this country.
You know, your story is much the same as mine. I grew up in the inner city of Atlanta, Georgia. My dad was born in 1920, yours in 1910. We're the same age at 63. But you're right. It was some very basic core principles and values that we were inculcated with between my dad and my mom. You know, faith, family, you know, individual responsibility, quality education, because that unlocks the doors of the equality of opportunity, small business entrepreneurship, service to the nation. What do you think has happened, especially in our inner cities with the Black community, that has led us to the decimation of the Black family, the lack of quality education opportunities? What do you think has been that, you know, degrading element that has brought us to this point from where you and I grew up?
Well, I think one thing that is significant, I think that listening to you for years, I know that you're a history buff. I'm a history buff as well. And I'm saying that if you don't have a command on history, in history, you're bound to make some tragic mistakes in assessing what goes on. If you look at from about the 1940s to the 1960s, African-Americans under Jim Crow, and we know that there are blemishes with this country, African-Americans performed at a high level given what was provided for us at that particular point in time. But we still were able to matriculate, be able to do promising things here in this country, and we reduced our poverty rate in half up to the 1960s. Now, we have a people that are transitioning, to become fulfilled citizens in this country. And what we also had during the 1960s was a movement from liberals, progressives at that particular point in time to leverage us to serve their interests. So we were fighting a battle, not only trying to come up from where we were, but we also had outside forces pushing down on us, utilizing us politically and everything else to take advantage of things for their interests. And I think we're battling through this at this particular point in time. So now we develop a subcultural doctrine that is counterproductive. It promotes out of wedlock births, all these other things. And I'm saying that is a fundamental curse that is happening with African Americans. Anytime you go to any urban setting and you have almost 80% of children born out of wedlock, it destroys the fundamental nuclear family. And when you go from there, you're totally decimated and you're constantly digging and putting a soil back into the grave where you are if you don't try to change those dynamics in the subcultural doctrines. And I'm saying these are prominent. These are the things that are being decimating for our part of our civilization.
You know, it's incredible because you're right. When you look at, you know, going through segregation and Jim Crow and all these things and the success that you saw in the Black community, small business ownership, educational advancements, you know, I often point back to Booker T. Washington and his philosophy in establishing Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute. Then all of a sudden, you know, in the 60s with the Great Society programs of Lyndon Johnson, then the government gets involved and it creates and expands this welfare state and decimates the family. Do you think when you look, because I want to talk about, you know, some of the aspects of your politics and policy, do you think that the community there in St. Louis is awakening to understand and see that more so than they have been previously?
I certainly do. Initially, I ran for mayor. My calling was to run for mayor for the city of St. Louis because I know with my background in economic development, business development, that I need to interject things that will help our community and bring some level of expertise. When I met with people in various groups on forums, debates, things of that nature, I totally wiped people out relative to their liberal stances. And people were also listening to the conservative platforms that you and I share, and they were really intrigued by it. As a matter of fact, I used to meet with groups, elder Black Americans, who, when I talk about the history of the party, our contributions, they are amazed that they had forgotten, and they were open to listening to the message. So I never got any pushback, any feedback, because people were trying to find out what was happening, but people closed the doors on the ability to provide the media to get the information out. And so what they've done since I had successful runs, running for mayor and running for Congress last time, they've tried to black out all of my media communications. They try to make sure that I'm not able to talk to people because no one ever attacked me. No one ever called me names or anything else because they knew my background in helping. They know my area of expertise and what I bring to the table in solving problems, something that they can't do, and people are open to it. We just have to get our message out.
You know, it's always so interesting how they talk about tolerance, but they're the most intolerant people that are around. So let's switch over and talk about Cori Bush. I mean, running against her, when you look at her record, when you look at how she was involved with the riots that occurred there in St. Louis and the loss of life for David Dorn, that police officer, and leading the mob against the McCloskeys there, how could a person like that get elected? I mean, because she's not serving the constituents, not that I can see. I mean, what has compelled you to take up the mantle to run against Cori Bush?
Because of what you just highlighted. What she's doing and people like her, they're decimating the community. They don't have any remedies. They have never solved any problems or been involved with solving problems their entire lives. But what they do have is support from leftists, liberals, progressives, the woke community to push that agenda that serves them, and they leverage them as fodder. They use them as shields to push their agenda, and most people, and it's very difficult. You have to look at it and assess it for what it is. Most people are attitudinally and intellectually somewhat lazy, and they get the information from whoever and whomever they can get it from. And so this is an easy fix to blame, to point fingers, where we come from a rich tradition in which I always tell people we certainly couldn't understand history because we come from a resilient people who worked hard, who were diligent, and they would be turning over in their graves. My father would be turning over in his graves if he knew I wasn't out here trying to fulfill the dream that he worked so hard to do to get us to where I am today, to let it go by the wayside for people who don't want to work. And we have to recognize that they don't want to do the work. They don't want to build up the knowledge base. They don't do anything that is necessary to change the plight of our children and the children that will make this world a better world.
You know, when you look at the comparative side-by-side analysis between yourself, Andrew, and Representative Cori Bush, what do you think are the advantages? What do you think are the positives that you have over her in this race that you need to expound upon and get out there?
Well, one thing that I have not done in running for mayor or anything else is attack an opponent. I constantly talk about what I bring to the table, and I think that resonates with people. When you look at what I've done as far as matriculating in the best schools in the metropolitan St. Louis area and within the state, if you look at someone who's saying undergraduate, and I went to an HBCU at Lincoln University and graduated with there with a BS in economics and business administration, and I've done all of those types of things. Plus, I've also tried to assist and help when it comes to the things that are necessary, understanding history, understanding policy, being involved with making decisions that impact an organization, an institution, and being successful in that regard. I'm saying that those are the pluses when we're dealing with a lady, and she has demonstrated wholeheartedly that she doesn't have a grasp of any of the information necessary to move us forward. She makes outlandish statements. She wants to get rid of the police who African-Americans, even though, again, we're not talking about a panacea when it comes to the police, but we're talking about the police who get out every day and try to do a yeoman's job to try to serve and protect its citizens. And they just openly attack the police and call it systemic racism when none of the data supports it, things of that nature. These are emotional outputs that they put out there, and we certainly can't have anyone out in charge leading when these things are critical for the uplift and to carry our people forward. When I say our people, I'm talking about the American people, mm-hmm. as well as African-American people. We need to take advantage of everything because we are still the greatest country on the planet. We just have a road bump at this particular point in time, and we need to move people like Cori Bush out of the way so that we can have people who have experience to be able to get out and lead.
What would you say are the top two issues for the constituents there in the congressional district that you're running to represent?
Crime and competent leadership.
Okay.
Crime is absolutely rampant in the metropolitan St. Louis area. I don't know if you knew this or not, Alan, is the fact that in running both times in this stronghold for Democrats, I received the support of the police, a public support of the police. in writing. Nothing has ever been done like that for a Republican in St. Louis in over 70 years. I was able to work that thing out, get people to understand the message, get out in front, and they have bought in and they're trying to support us as best as possible. It is absolutely critical that we do something about the crime so we can open things up for things like economic development, community development, and all of those categories in which I've led departments in those. But you have to have a safe environment for those things to thrive. Right now, you don't hear anything from Cori Bush or any of the administration here talking about those levers that are necessary to make this area grow or to even input policy that will make things grow. But they don't know it. We have to make it firm that they don't know it. And we have to move forward and offer people things that will necessarily move things in the right direction. And that comes from competent leadership, not people who want to victimize and blame everyone else.
How does the illegal immigration, because I'm down here in Texas and we live it every day. How has the illegal immigration issue affected you all there in that area? And also, are people suffering from the rise in inflation, especially with gas prices and food commodity prices?
That's absolutely significant as well, Alan. When you look at, and no one wants to talk about it, when you look at fiscal policy, monetary policy from Congress, we know that inflation comes from one place and basically one place only. It comes from monetary issues, spending, creating money when there's nothing to back it, and that comes from Congress. We need to reduce that level of spending that causes these inflationary issues and challenges. When we see stimulus packages that come forward, not based on anything from the Biden administration, it increases inflation, it impacts people, but people close a blind eye to it because people say flowery things that put us in trouble. But I'm out front talking about reducing spending, things of that nature that impacts the pocket of each and every one of the citizens here in the United States.
You know, we just remembered Resurrection Day yesterday. We're taking this on April Fool's Day, Monday the 1st of April. I think one of the critical aspects in the Black community entities are the Black pastors. How did Black pastors respond, you know, in your neighborhood, in your area, to this insidious proclamation of Transgender Visibility Day on Resurrection Day? I mean, I have not seen a lot other than Pastor Amachukwa out of North Carolina, but I have not seen a lot of Black pastors nationally express their angst and disgust over what came out of the Biden administration. Have you?
I have not, and I think that is an extension of the subcultural doctrines that exist. People not being fully aware, not correlating, not connecting the dots to understand that these things are counter what you learn in basic Bible study. It counters the basic understandings of what you get for religion. But they ignored, again, when I was running for office, I got support to some degree, but it was always this underlying thing, this shadow in the background, telling them that they couldn't go against the status quo. And I think status quo philosophies that exist because of the subcultural doctrines that permeate our society at this particular point in time and that subculture, I think that is what's critically holding things back from people making objective analysis and making the observations that you've made. And also, when you look at things that are happening, and going back to your previous question that I did not answer, when it comes to the crisis, the border crisis, immigrants coming into this particular area, African-Americans here are starting to feel it to some degree. And as always, African-Americans have always been open arms to people in general, open arms to just about anyone who wants to come into the neighborhoods, things of that nature. We've never had pushback in that regard. But this is when you talk about the immigration problem, causes a crisis for our economy. It causes a crisis for people who are losing jobs, to people who haven't come in and done the work to become American citizens. And now it's starting to flow in the St. Louis area, so much so now that we've had several crimes associated with illegal immigrants. And I'm not afraid to call them illegal immigrants. But as far as the pastors are concerned, I think what we have to do is say that, hey, we should lead. And remember, I said there's a crisis in leadership.
Yeah.
We have to lead, because if you really are a pastor and you believe in the good books, you believe in the works of Jesus Christ, you should be standing out front.
You're absolutely right. Let's talk about this race specifically. What do you see as your biggest hurdle or obstacle in being successful in this race?
Blackout from the media, like I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Again, when I get in front of groups of African Americans or any group, they listen. I get a lot of support. But oddly enough, a lot of people come and say, are you running? And I'm right in the middle of a race. And I say, yes, I'm running. They said, well, we were hoping that you're running, but no one, I'm saying the mainstream media will not apply anything I do to their programs or their platforms. It's great programming like yours where I try to get out and talk about these types of things, but we will utilize it being strategic and being tactical, all the new advantages with the social media, things of that nature, yeah, to try to get the message out. But it's certainly the support and help of people that will help drive us to get to where we need to go. And we have to also get away from people who don't want to support because they're afraid of some level of backlash that even comes from our Republican constituents and stakeholders. They are terrified of the backlash that comes from the Democratic stronghold in the metropolitan St. Louis area. So they hide and don't want to publicly support me, and that makes it absolutely difficult. But we have to get over that as well, because we have to keep pushing forward.
No, you're absolutely right. And so with that being said, I mean, I doubt it would be great if it would happen that you will ever be able to get a debate between yourself and Representative Bush. So do you think that's a possibility?
Oh, there's no way on the planet. And strategically, if I was her in her camp, I would tell her not to get on the stage with me either, because all the Democrats that I had debates and forums with when I ran for mayor, they all were absolutely shook by the fact that they couldn't handle most of the things I talked about. And I made them look bad, even so much the current press, a mayor of the city of St. Louis used to be on the stage and say, I agree with the Republican. So they made a mistake of having me on the stage with all the Democrats at one time. And I really made a mockery of their inability to be able to get anything done historically. They haven't demonstrated, and they certainly have demonstrated that they don't have the capacity now to create and lead.
Here's the tough question, because, you know, we have a viewership across the country. Why is this congressional race that you're running against Cori Bush important, not just there in St. Louis, but for the entire nation?
Because it is a federal position. Not only does this position impact the congressional district, the first congressional district here in St. Louis, it impacts the region, the state, the nation, and internationally. Policies that come from this position, policies that come from Congress, has an overarching impact on everything that goes on. This is why when you hear her make statements, prepared statements, and they're short and she never can answer any question after reading the prepared statements, she runs out of there. This is why it's so critical to get someone like her out of there, because those statements don't make sense. She makes international statements against Israel. She makes our friend in the Middle East, even though that there are problems that are going on at this particular point in time. And I would love to be able to sit down at some point and go over some detailed information relative to that. But she doesn't have any knowledge in any of those areas. I will even go to this point, and this is not attacking, but she's incompetent in those areas. She doesn't even understand taxing, none of those things. So they don't want to expose her in that regard. And those things are critical for all stakeholders in the United States of America, not just in congressional district number one. And we have to do something to put us in the right direction so that we can maintain our leadership of the world and be outstanding in what we do.
So Andrew Jones running for Missouri's first congressional district there, centered around the St. Louis area. How do people follow you? How can people contact you? How can people support you? Because, as you know, it takes money to run a campaign, and he needs that financial support. How can people look you up and stay in touch with you?
Thank you for the opportunity, Alan. It's AndrewJonesForCongress.com. That's F-O-R-4, not the number four. AndrewJonesForCongress.com. And we also have an opportunity to also donate to FireCoriBush.com. We thought that was clever in putting that out there, that FireCoriBush.com or AndrewJonesForCongress.com, and any and every little bit that you provide for us will be utilized in upseating Cori. We are trying to get the message out early, and because if we get the message out early, people will no longer have to come up to me and say, boy, I wish you were running, and they can start spreading the word, and it won't be a last minute push like we've historically tried to do, because we always had to sit in the background. But certainly anyone who can get out all over the nation, because you're going to be impacted by this with Corey and making federal positions and policies, contributing to those, we certainly need to get this changed, because not only is she incompetent, she's also embarrassing the whole nation, and we certainly are better than that.
Okay, I'm going to give you the last 90 seconds. What's your message to the viewership of the Steadfast and Loyal podcast?
Well, we have an opportunity. We have a grand opportunity to change the plight of our great beloved country. But we also have to be involved as citizens. If you go back and you think of some of the great philosophers throughout time, they always talk about the responsibility of the citizenry in order to uphold a stable, progressive, excellent system that provides for as many people as possible if they want to have the opportunity to do so. Because certainly when we have and we talk about there's great opportunity in this country, there's also opportunity to fail, but we want people to follow that trajectory of having success and moving forward, because it is not a nightmare. It is something that can come to pass. We just have to get involved. And that's why I got involved in running for this race the first time in 16, running for mayor for the city of St. Louis, because someone has to stand out. You were colonel, lieutenant colonel in the military. I salute you for your efforts, all of the things that you've contributed, and me not being able to serve. I feel that this is my level of responsibility that I can give, because I took advantage of the things my parents set forth for me, what you providing and going out, risking your life to be a standard bearer for our country and to protect us. The least that I can do, the least that I can do is to come back and give from all the learnings I've gotten professionally and all of my experiences helping young people. And when my wife used to look at me and say, are you going to make it home for dinner? And I said, well, I'm going to go back out to this practice here to try to help this group of young people. And so I have all of those types of touchstones out here. And that's the minimum that I could be doing. And all of us as United States citizens, we should be contributing in some shape or manner. And I'm saying, if you can help me to upseat Cori Bush, that will be the beginning of the catalyst of the change that everyone talks about that they want in America.
Well, Andrew Jones, I want to thank you so very much for joining us here at the Steadfast and Loyal podcast. And one of the things, people, that I have always been not happy with when it comes to the Republican Party or the conservative movement, the political consultant class that has always said, you know, let's not worry about the inner cities. Let's not worry about, you know, in the black communities or maybe even the Hispanic communities. But when you think about it, the greatest amount of failure of progressive, socialist, leftist, Marxist policies you see in the inner cities. And as Andrew just said, the decimation of family, lack of quality educational opportunities, economic entrepreneurship, all of these things that we see happening. And the undermining of our faith, which is what so incensed me about that proclamation that Joe Biden put out. You know, we already have Transgender Month, we got weeks, we got LGBTQ Month and all these things. So we don't need to be focusing on that, especially on Resurrection Day. But if we don't support men like Andrew Jones that will be willing to take the fight behind the enemy lines in these urban population centers, it's a numbers game. Because eventually there comes a time, even in a red state, where if the left controls the urban population centers, it won't matter what happens out in the rural areas. So please, I implore you to support Andrew Jones. Go to his website, Andrew Jones for Congress, or firecorybush.com, and support him in what he's doing. Send a message that we need more young black constitutional conservatives, men and women, to step up in the areas that they grew up in and to make a difference. And if you like this podcast, please click the like button and share it with others. And folks, until next time, remain steadfast and loyal. Before they burn it down.